Broadcasting live from the Biz 1190 studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for the Business Radio X Week in Review. We know you're busy, so we've got you covered. Catch up on the week's top Atlanta business headlines and meet the industry execs and thought leaders who move Atlanta's bottom line. Now, here's your host, Dana Barrett.
Good afternoon. It is Sunday, March 9th, 2014. This is the Business Radio X Week in Review. I'm Dana Barrett, and with me today, as always, producer Mike Roy. How are you, sir?
Good. Very good. How are you?
Good.
And we are live, because she just said the date.
That's right. We are live. We are local. We are here in Atlanta.
Yes, and it is 12:06:27, just to prove we're live.
Yeah, there you go. The number here in the studio, 404-231-1190. You can absolutely call us. We like to interact. We're happy to talk to you. And if you're shy, you can just tweet us using my Twitter handle at Dana H. Barrett or with the hashtag BizRadio.
And if you're shy, just remember it's radio. No one can see you.
That's true. You could just give us a fake name and no one will even ever know.
I think
it
that's why a lot of us are in radio.
Yes, we can hide.
We can hide behind. You can hear us, but you can't see us.
That's right. We could be making mean faces at you throughout the whole show. You don't really know. That's right. All right. So let me think about what's going on. I didn't see any movies this weekend. Are you shocked? I know it's shocking because normally I'm at the movies. I did watch the Oscars last week after our show, of course. That was it was interesting.
Take precedent over our show.
No, our show was more important, and then came the Oscars. Yeah. I thought Ellen, you know, she's always funny. I thought she did a good job. And, you know, some of the bigger sillinesses that occurred during the Oscars, of course, everyone tweeting about Jennifer Lawrence falling out of the limo. I mean, she's just so cute. She can do no wrong. And a couple of plastic surgery haters talking about Goldie Hawn and Kim Novak and a couple other people who had some, you know, who looked a little different, shall we say. So there was that. I'm not a fan of that. I feel like in terms of the hating, I feel like, you know, you can't just leave people alone. If that's what they want to do and they feel good, like, The Kim Novak thing, I don't know if you watched the Oscars, Mike, but the Kim Novak thing, she went on stage with Matthew McConaughey to give an award, and she, A, had sort of some serious-looking plastic surgery, but B, she's 81 years old, and she seemed to be fairly confused about what she was doing up there, and I actually felt like that was the bigger problem. I mean, the plastic surgery, that's your opinion, whether or not you think it looks good, whether or not you like it, but I felt like she just seemed confused and I felt uncomfortable watching her. So that was a problem for me. But otherwise, anyway, that was the Oscars. That's like a long time ago already. So in other news, you know how much I like shameless self-promotion.
Really? You?
Yeah.
No.
So I have to mention, and I'll probably mention it a few times today, that starting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., you can catch The Dana Barrett Show live and local right here out of this studio and on Biz 1190 a.m., biz1190.com.
Oh, I can tell that you wanted to interrupt what was happening. You wanted to interrupt the show that was before this one just to say that. Yes, because
yeah.
I could just tell.
Yeah. So big news. It's like this week coming up is going to be my Jimmy Fallon week, moving from the Sunday time slot to a better time slot. I've got a slew of great guests coming in the studio for the show, so I'm very excited about that. But we're not here to talk about me. Well, maybe we are a little bit.
We're not.
Wait, what? So we, as usual on the Business Radio X Week in Review, we like to catch you up on local headlines, national relevant headlines, and of course bring you great clips from the BusinessRadioX.com week prior. So I've got some great stuff lined up. Some interesting stories, a couple stories about Bitcoin that we're going to hit on today. I don't know if you guys saw the news, but apparently somebody alleged that, you know, how the Bitcoin founder is a mystery. Nobody knows who he is and he has the pseudonym and whatever. Well, somebody thought they outed him and they found this random dude with a similar name in California somewhere, I believe. And so now that this guy's being chased all around by the paparazzi and swearing it's not him and he has nothing to do with it. So there's that. I'm once again relying on my technology to get me through the show today with Evernote, so we'll see how I do with that. I keep always forgetting to get my mouse out, and I just have trouble getting through all of this. Anyway, some stories about Coke. We got some stuff about the Falcon Stadium, all kinds of interesting stuff to talk about. But I do want to go ahead and get to this first clip a little bit early today because that's what I feel like doing, and this is my show, so I can do what I want. The first clip we have today is from a show called Silver Lining in the Cloud. It's out of our Gwinnett studio over at Business Radio X. It's hosted by Dominic Rainey. And this week they had on a guy named Britton Clark. He's from the Atlanta Mission. But prior to working at the Atlanta Mission, he worked for Red Bull. So very different kinds of jobs. And in this clip, he sort of talks a little bit about his move from Red Bull to the Atlanta Mission. And, you know, I love to talk about people who sort of reinvent their careers and do something new, because I think I'm on my like 8th or 9th reinvention myself, maybe 12th, I don't know, 17th, something. So I like to see people kind of moving around career-wise and doing something that makes them feel good. So take a listen to Britton and we'll talk about it.
Through an event that I was doing here in Atlanta called Red Bull Soapbox Race, which is that funny event where teams build cars and they race them down Piedmont Park, I met Atlanta Mission. Atlanta Mission put together a team and entered into that competition, and I'd never heard of them, but I had been praying that God would open up a different opportunity for me professionally, because I was loving my job. I was loving that 9-to-5, but I just felt like there was more. I felt like I could use my talents for something greater. And so when I met Atlanta Mission and heard that they needed somebody to come help them do media relations and social media, I jumped at the opportunity, and it's been amazing. And I truly believe that nonprofits don't need to think like nonprofits. They can think like a for-profit and think Absolutely. Innovative. And so I come from one of the organizations that I believe is the most innovative in this country. I mean, they put a man up in the moon, basically, and had him jump from space, and that's Red Bull. And then now I'm working for a nonprofit that I believe is just as innovative in the city. And I tell people all the time, I say, you know, what I get to see in life transformation at the Mission every day is a type of adrenaline rush that you can't get in a can. And so I haven't traded any innovation or any excitement from going from Red Bull to Atlanta Mission. I get to see authentic adrenaline, authentic, you know, flight in life. And so I'm really blessed.
All right. Again, that was from the show Silver Lining in the Cloud over on BusinessRadioX.com. If you want to hear the whole interview with Britton Clark, you can go to silverlining.BusinessRadioX.com. And again, I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, on the one hand, he sort of said, because I'm sure he didn't want to throw his old company under the bus, you know, that he was happy in his job. But he also said he was sort of praying for God to show him something new. So maybe he wasn't as happy as he said. Anyway, I think the point being that I think a lot of people feel that way about their jobs. You know, they're okay with it. It's not, but it's not the dream job, or they want to give back more, or they want to, you know, explore a different talent or whatever it is. I think you have to sort of be willing to take a risk, put yourself out there. I mean, obviously he meets the Atlanta Mission at the, you know, the race that he was talking about in Piedmont Park. He obviously didn't just meet them and say hello and walk away. You know, he met them and he said, how can I get involved? And so he took a risk. He put himself out there and he ended up getting a job there. And that's, I think, important, because that's what you have to do if you want to make change in your own life. You have to be willing to put yourself out there and say what you want, you know. All right. Well, while we're talking about individuals and some of the business decisions they make, easy for me to say, I did catch a story this week about the Forbes 2014 World's Billionaires List. And there are 8 Georgians that made the list this year, so I thought I would share those with you. I am not on there, sadly. But if any of these people want to adopt me, I'm sure we could work something out.
Just
saying. But if you're curious as to who they are, Ann Cox Chambers, the 94-year-old daughter of James Cox, the media mogul who, of course, built Cox Enterprises, is number 58 on the list with an estimated net worth of $15.5 billion. Her nephew, James Kennedy, who's 66 years old, is number 168 on the list. He has approximately $7.7 billion. Bernie Marcus, 84-year-old Home Depot co-founder and sort of well-known Atlanta philanthropist, is number 446 on the list with $3.5 billion. Ted Turner, who's now 75 years old, can you believe it? He's at number 796 on the list. I mean, he's just has a measly $2.2 billion. The other Home Depot co-founder, Arthur Blank, who also, of course, owns the Falcons, is at number 988. He has $1.8 billion estimated net worth. Jeffrey Lorberbaum, easy for me to say, is the chief executive officer of carpet and flooring giant Mohawk, and he apparently has about $1.7 billion. And then last but not least, Spanx founder, Sarah Blakely. She's only 43 years old. She's at number 1,565 on the list, with a net worth estimated at a cool $1 billion. So, I forgot to mention Truett Cathy. I missed him as I was reading down the list. He's also on the list. 92 years old, Truett Cathy. number 224 on the list, $6.2 billion. This is just, I bring this up so that we can all just fantasize about what it might be like to have even, you know, a fraction of that amount of money in our bank accounts. I mean, obviously very accomplished people. Many of them are seniors, shall we say. So they've had time to not only grow their family businesses, but also grow that money. Except for Sarah Blakely. She's the youngest one that I see, at least from Atlanta. I'm sure I don't have the whole list in front of me. I just have the Atlanta peeps. But yeah, I'm just wistful and a little bit jealous and, you know.
You seem angry.
No. No, I'm not angry.
I'm wishing, like,
I just, you know.
What could I have done to crack that list?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. All right, speaking of Arthur Blank, before we go to the break, Arthur Blank and the Major League Soccer Commissioner were seen together recently at the a soccer game that was held at the Georgia Dome, talking about bringing Major League Soccer here to Atlanta as part of the new Falcon Stadium that would go up. So it would take, if they brought it here, the games would take place in that same stadium. Of course, soccer fans, very excited about the potential, and Arthur Blank not being too clear about it, but saying, I would say the talks that we're having are substantial. So look for that maybe in the next couple of years. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more local headlines, a couple national headlines, and more great clips. Stay with us. All right, we are back. I was just enjoying the jazzy music, as always. You know how much I love it. So much fun. So before the break, we talked about the Falcon Stadium and possibly getting soccer here, which would be really cool, I think. A lot of soccer players, of course, in Atlanta. Lots of kids playing soccer. I think there's enough fan base here for it. I think the Major League of Soccer, however they call it, well, I don't know what that.
It's MLS, Major League Soccer.
Okay, Major League. Well, I think they have certain criteria that you have to meet as a city to be considered to have a team. And Atlanta, I think, does meet the criteria from what I understood. So I think it's a real possibility. And one of the criteria has to do with the stadium, which is, I think, possibly why we weren't really in the running before to get a team. But the new Falcon Stadium, if it's built not only with football but also with soccer in mind, then I think there's a real likelihood that that could happen. However, we like controversy in the city, and people just like to complain about stuff. So I also caught a story that I wanted to share with you. Of course, now I can't find it, but I do vaguely remember what it was about. So I'm just going to share it with you from memory. But apparently there's a new group of people who have gotten together to, oh, here it is, to sort of fight the Falcon Stadium deal, because God forbid they should just leave well enough alone. But, and I don't know that they're going to get anywhere with this, but it's a new quote unquote coalition called Atlantans for a Fair Deal. And what they're saying is they want to have the city council, the Atlanta City Council, reverse last year's decision to use at least $200 million in bonds that are backed by the hotel motel tax revenue to help pay for the new stadium. Of course, their argument is that, you know, Arthur Blank could pay for the whole thing himself and we shouldn't have to pay for it, which I don't really quite get. I guess I'd have to talk to them to find out exactly why they don't think this is right. But the group consists of Reverend Anthony Motley of the Lindsay Street Baptist Church, and William Perry, who heads the ethics watchdog group Common Cause Georgia, and also Debbie Dooley, who is the head of the Atlanta Tea Party Patriots. She seems to get into the headlines quite a bit. I'd like to talk to her. I might have to try to get her on the upcoming Dana Barrett Show, which launches tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Utterly shameless.
I know. We're just having fun today. What can I tell you? All right, so let's see what else we have going on. We've got some more great clips from Business Radio X, and the next one that I want to share with you is from a relatively new show over at Business Radio X. It's called Midtown Business Radio, and this one, Lee and Stone host the show, Lee Cantor and Stone Payton, and this week they had John Stevenson on, who is the president and CEO of the College Football Hall of Fame. And in this clip, he's talking about why the College Football Hall of Fame chose to move to Atlanta. So I think it's kind of interesting, and I'd love you to take a listen to it.
In 2009, Atlanta had the opportunity to be a candidate for the move of the National College Football Hall of Fame from South Bend, Indiana. Before that, I'd been in Kingsland, Ohio, and before that, New York City. The National Football Foundation started the College Football Hall of Fame back in the 40s, and they continued to name the classes, and they're looking for a bigger stage than South Bend. South Bend's a lovely place, but it's harder to get to than Atlanta, certainly. And we in Atlanta, some organizers retained me as their counsel to help negotiate that here. In 2009, we got them to commit to coming here, and now we've got a big building downtown on the old green lot of the Congress Center that should be open for football season this year.
So now when they're deciding where to put it, obviously there was some logic in putting it in South Bend because of Notre Dame mm-hmm. and the popularity of football there. When you're trying to convince them to come to Atlanta, how are you selling that?
Well, Atlanta is a destination city, whether we Atlantans are too close to it to realize what some of us are. I mean, we had over 40 million visitors in 2012, according to the ACVB. The Centennial Park, Georgia World Congress Center, Georgia Dome District is really a destination for tourism and business travel. Ever since the Olympics came and the park was created, of course, we've had the world's largest aquarium built down there and the World of Coca-Cola and Children's Museum, their CNN Center, and now we have that Ferris wheel down there that adds to the ambiance, which is fun. And it really is. I mean, go next week to the SEC Championship basketball tournament, and you'll see that it's a really fun place to be down there. And so to be able to fill in one of the last blank spots down there, which was the old green parking lot of the mm-hmm. Congress Center, us along with the new National Center for Civil and Human Rights, it's also under construction down there. You've got a really cool visitor destination district.
All right. Again, that was the Midtown Business Radio Show on BusinessRadioX.com, and that was John Stevenson from the College Football Hall of Fame talking to Lee Cantor. And, you know, I think it's interesting because he talks about the Atlanta as a destination city, and it is. And he said, you know, those of us who live here maybe don't realize that and don't see it that way, and it's true. I mean, I think why would you come to Atlanta for vacation? Like, who does that? But it's true. There's a lot of events that go on here. There's already a lot of football. There's bowl games and stuff like that that happen here. And there is more and more and more stuff to see. And I guess just because you live here, you think, well, I'm here every day. What is there to do that's touristy? But there actually are some things. And, when you think about other cities, I mean, there's some obvious things. I mean, New York City, it's huge. It has all the, you know, the Broadway stuff. It has the shopping. It has the Statue of Liberty. It has the Empire State Building. I mean, there's a lot to see. And our stuff maybe isn't quite as obvious or as old, some of it. But still, you know, there is a lot here. And we forget that, I think, when we're here.
Well, also, I feel like if you live in a certain place, you're not going to see it as a touristy place.
No.
I've talked to people who at the beach who say, and in Florida, who say, oh, there's nothing to do here. But that's right. Just because they live there, I guess. Right. They're used to it all.
So. Right.
And it could apply to New York also.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly, there are, quote-unquote, I don't mean to say it like this, but lesser cities than, you know, New York is sort of an obvious tourist destination. I think people know, you know, but even L.A., I mean, what's really in L.A. besides Hollywood and beautiful weather and beaches, you know? But L.A. itself is just a sprawling sort of city like Atlanta, you know?
Well, you mentioned it. The weather is great there. It's on the ocean.
Right. And it is different. There is Beverly Hills and the yes. shopping and the whatever. And right. you can do Hollywood tours and stuff like that, you know, and there's Universal Studios and, you know,
it
amusement parks, Disney and whatever. Yes. So, yeah, it depends on your taste. But we are becoming with, you know, every passing year, there's more and more to do here. And we're sort of becoming more and more of an important city, I think, which is cool. I've been here a long time now, so watching it grow and change is pretty interesting. All right. So while we're on the subject of Atlanta as an awesome place, let's see if I can work my technology. I don't know that I can. Here's one for you. We've been mentioning Bieber quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, and so I couldn't help one more little Bieber story just to close it all down. Apparently, a Bieber Twitter follower was arrested sleeping inside the Bieber rented home here in Atlanta this past week. This young girl, 23-year-old, was found sleeping on the floor of one of the home's bedrooms and told the police that she was a friend of his, but push came to shove, and in fact, no, she's just a Twitter follower and apparently also a stalker. So, awkward. All right, let's talk about some other stuff going on around town. This one was interesting. You know, my eyesight is not as good as it once was. So when I first saw this headline, I thought it said Coke CEO Muhtar Kent gets giant pay out. But actually, it said pay cut. And that makes more sense.
Little difference there.
Yeah, and make first I was thinking, oh, he's leaving and they're giving him a giant amount of money. No,
the story, quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite. And in fact, I found it really interesting. Now, first of all, let me just explain in case you're worried about Muhtar Kent. His total compensation was slashed to $20.4 million last year, down 33% from the $30.5 million he was paid in 2012. So I wouldn't cry for him because $20.4 million a year is still pretty good money. So, but I did think it was interesting because it's sort of the opposite of what we're used to hearing. We're used to hearing about these, you know, golden parachutes they get as they're leaving these companies and all these big dollars going to people. It's still a huge amount of money the guy is getting. They did not cut his base pay, also in case you're worried about him, just some of his incentives and long-term incentives and things like that. But and he's not the only one. Several other Coke execs also dropped from sums like $8.2 million to $6.6 million. Et cetera, et cetera. Don't cry for them. They're going to be okay. Also, this happened, I think, maybe last week, and I just didn't get a chance to tell you about it, or maybe it was early this week. But Frank Blake is currently the CEO at Home Depot and is not stepping down yet. But he's, you know, getting up there in age, so they're sort of looking at who's going to replace him when he does. Well, now, apparently, Craig Menear is the apparent front runner. He's 56 years old and was just recently promoted into a position with the intention, I think, to move him eventually into that top spot. So the other internal candidate, sorry, is Carol Tomei, who is the CFO of the company. And apparently once she heard that it was not going to be her, she sold off a big chunk of stock. So I don't know if that was just because she was mad or she needed some cash or what was going on there. But yeah. These are not problems I have to worry about. Yeah. Okay. Now, we were talking about all the stadiums and whatever and, you know, all this growth in Atlanta. So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some changes at the Savannah Harbor that are not so great and some other sort of construction related issues. We'll be back. All right, we are back. It is the Business Radio X Week in Review. And at the very beginning of the show, I mentioned some stuff about Bitcoin. So I want to get back to that. There's an Atlanta tie-in. First of all, I mentioned, and I'll kind of dig a little further into the story, that a reporter, I think, initially thought they found the actual founder who is sort of unknown and has a pseudonym. And the pseudonym that he or she or they use is Satoshi Nakamoto. Well, they found this guy named Dorian Satoshi Nakamoto and decided it was him. Now, Dorian is a 64-year-old retired engineer who says he never heard of Bitcoin until his son told him that he got a call from a reporter asking if his dad was the founder. Now, who knows if this is true or false, but probably it's not him, I'm thinking. Anyway, he said he would give the guy an interview, but he was chased all over town by paparazzi. I mean, this poor guy is being, if it's not him, if it's him, then I guess he kind of deserves it, but it's probably not him. And so this poor random guy who has a similar name is being sort of, I don't know, maybe he's enjoying his 15 minutes of fame or maybe he's being tortured by the press. I don't know. Anyway, on that note or along those lines, I've mentioned before that there's a company in Atlanta called BitPay, which what they do is sort of provide a mechanism in which retailers online, I believe, and maybe offline as well, can accept Bitcoin. So they provide some technology to help people use Bitcoin. Well, they are expanding. They say, based on the fact that there's so much now demand for Bitcoin. So what they're doing is they're planning to, right now they're working out of Atlanta Tech Village, which if you don't know about Atlanta Tech Village, it's located in the old Atlanta Business Chronicle building right there in Buckhead, as you're getting off the Buckhead Loop, sort of right on Piedmont. Well, they're planning to move next door. They signed a lease for a 8,000 square foot piece of space right next door to Tech Village, and they're planning to add about 60 jobs over the next year. So they think this is viable and going to continue to grow, and apparently their investors do as well. So we'll see what happens. I want to try to get an interview with that guy too. Just sort of curious. I still don't really fully grasp how Bitcoin works and who should be. And is it ever going to become mainstream, or is it always going to be like a thing just that really techie nerds use? I don't know. Like, is my mom ever going to use Bitcoin? I kind of doubt it. We'll see. I don't know. Interesting stuff. I was talking also before the break about the stadium and people arguing over it and soccer coming here and the College Football Hall of Fame. So, you know, we're talking about a lot of growth across the country right now. I mean, the economy is sort of lukewarmly moving up. You know, it's not rushing to be great, but apparently it's doing better. And one of the measures of that is optimism over new construction projects. And so there was a survey done by the Associated General Contractors of America nationwide. And the South is seeing the greatest optimism over new construction projects based on that survey. So it's kind of interesting. And you can't help but sort of see that as you drive around town. There are a lot of cranes in action. There's a lot of motion around here in terms of new building apartments. Some people are saying condos are coming back again. A lot of retail, certainly here in Buckhead, but all over the place. We're seeing, you know, I think I talked last week about that new big golf event space coming into Alpharetta. I mean, there's a lot of stuff being built and developed right now, which is exciting. And I hope it all goes well, because sometimes when there's that boom of building, then you just have a lot of empty space waiting to be rented out, and that can be ugly too. So because, you know, it's not like these guys all get together and discuss like, all right, I'm going to build a shopping center here and you shouldn't build one next door because I'm going to take all the tenants. No, they compete with each other for tenants, right? And so sometimes that if there's too much space, then the prices go down and that can cause problems. So we'll see what happens. But I think right now it's looking positive. And they wouldn't be doing all that building if they weren't forecasting more jobs and more people and all of that stuff coming into the city. So while we're on the subject of building, the Westin has completed their $70 million renovation. The Westin is Atlanta's fifth largest hotel. And the renovations and construction and stuff there have been going on for 6 years. They redid their restaurant on top and at the hotel rooms. And so I like that we're keeping the old stuff fresh, as opposed to just letting it go into disrepair and building new stuff. That's been one of the longstanding problems in Atlanta, I think, is like they just ignore like an old shopping center and build a brand new one right next to it, and the old one sort of sits there and festers. So I'm glad that this building, which is sort of an Atlanta landmark, it's the big, tall, circular building, has been revamped. So if you get a chance to go down there and check it out, do that. All right, we've got one more clip to share with you today. This is also from the Midtown Business Radio show on Business Radio X, hosted by Lee and Stone. And another guest they had on that show was named Rob Kishuk, and he's the CEO of a company called Perfect Post. Now, you can kind of guess by the name of that it has to do with posting on social media. Another hot topic of mine, how much social media to do, you know, as a business. Is it worth your time? Is it not? Well, Rob talks about how his company, Perfect Post, is helping companies sort of maximize their social media. So let's listen to that.
What we focused in on, though, is we found when you really ask someone, you know, what is performance worth to you in social? The people that could give us an answer to that were people who had a dollar attached to what they were doing in social. So we started focusing, and we were working with Half Off Depot, now in crowd here in town, and some other folks, and we found that they could tell you, if I increase your Facebook reach and clicks by 30%, you can tell me what that's worth. So we've really focused in on how do we help an e-commerce marketer, someone with a dollar sign attached to what they're doing, optimize social media for revenue generation, for email acquisition. How do you convert that fan into an email subscriber or someone else you've got kind of your hands on? And then take the data you get from all that and feed that into your paid social. So you're going to spend some money in Facebook marketing. How do you spend that as effectively as possible?
So now, have you learned any tips or tricks for the people in order to increase engagement?
Yeah, and we built all that into product. I mean, we start with data, and we are feeding data back into our system every single week. Facebook's algorithm changes all the time. They don't necessarily tell you how they're changing it. We let the data tell us how it's changing and how people are engaging differently, and then we feed that right back into our product to say, look, if you post a link post, you're going to get more clicks right now. If you post a photo post right now, you're going to get more engagement. And if you're trying to get a click through to buy a product, then those clicks are important.
Now, what about the new, like, kind of quizzes and surveys and things like that?
Well, certainly. There's certainly a bent of it, which is content, you know. So we kind of focus on how do you take, you know, it's up to our clients to provide the best content. How do we wrap that content up in a way that's going to give them the best fighting chance to reach people? Because there are certain ways you can do things that are going to have no chance of succeeding. We want to keep people from doing that. If you write a 10-page essay and try to fit it into one post, you know, 90% of that's going to go below the fold. Nobody's going to see it. If you bury a link 10 layers down, it can be the best content in the world. It's not going to work. We don't focus as much on, you know, I would say kind of the quizzes and some of the, like, misleading headline stuff is a little bit of kind of garbage and gaming the system. We try and shy away from that a little bit because if you focus on gaming the system, you're going to get your comeuppance eventually. They're going to change things. If you build your business on gaming it, you're going to lose.
All right, again, that was from the Midtown Business Radio Show on BusinessRadioX.com. And you can go over to BusinessRadioX.com and check out that entire interview. I thought it was really interesting. You know, like I said, I question all the time sort of the balance of using social media, spending time on it as a business, and whether or not that converts into dollars in. Does it convert into sales, into revenue? And you know, it's interesting. I recently, a small company that I'm sort of aware of, I saw they had an ad out for a full-time social media person. And again, you know, you have to wonder, I mean, that's expensive. You know, they're going to hire somebody for a pretty decent salary, probably, to do social media all day, every day. That's a lot of money that you're investing in social media. And if it's not going to translate into sales, how important is it? It's a challenging balance, I think, because you can't not do it. You got to do some amount of social media. You have to participate. But on the other hand, how much? And the other thing I thought was so interesting about that interview is he talks about gaming the system. And, you know, what he means by that is things like when you click on, I clicked on an article the other day, or what I thought was an article about Ellen DeGeneres. I like her. I'm interested in her. There was some headline that implied something. I don't remember now what it was, but I clicked on it and I get over there and it's an ad for some beauty cream or something. And I was really annoyed. And so I think that's kind of what they mean by gaming the system. If you set people up to think that they're clicking for one reason and they get there and it's something else, how you get the click and that's great, but how long term that's going to catch up with you. If all you're doing is dragging people over somewhere they don't really want to go, you need a better, you know, it's a bait and switch. So you do have to be careful about that. I just thought that was interesting. I'm glad people are talking about that, and I'm glad some of the social media consultants out there are saying you can't do that. Well, you can do it, but it's going to come back and bite you in the end, and that's sort of what he was saying. You can do that, and that may bring you clicks, impressions, whatever, and if someone's measuring that for you, that's great, but it's not going to work long term, and I think that's very true. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got a couple of national headlines to share with you, and I've got some stuff to complain about. I know you're shocked, but
I'm waiting for the soapbox.
The soapbox will be coming out, so stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. It's the Business Radio X Week in Review. I am Dana Barrett. Mike Roy is behaving pretty well today, I have to say.
As opposed to how I normally behave?
Yes, exactly.
Not pushing your buttons, or at least not too many of them.
That's right. All right, I mentioned a couple national stories. This one's sort of national slash local, but I wanted to mention in case you're not keeping up with it. Last Tuesday, President Barack Obama released the federal budget that he's proposing, and the deepening of the Savannah Harbor project was ignored basically in the budget. So that's bad news for the port. We really want that port to be deepened. It needs to sort of coincide with the changes to the Panama Canal, because bigger ships that need deeper ports are going to start coming through there, I think, in 2017. And in order for Savannah not to lose business, the port has to be deepened. And we have enough money that was raised at the state level to begin the process anyway. But the only thing that the federal government did was, you know, give an extra $1 million for more research, which I think, you know, in Georgia, we're sort of beyond that. We don't need any more research. We're ready to go. I can tell you that our two senators were not happy about it and have charged the White House with failing to keep its promises. So stay tuned for more on that. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about that over the next weeks, months, and years, really. Other national stories I thought interesting. The February jobs numbers were up, sort of-ish, despite the prediction was that they would be lower because of the brutal weather, and they were better than predicted. So still not great, but better than predicted. I read an article that sort of talked about five things to like about the February job numbers. First of all, spring is coming, so that'll help even more. Second of all, there are more of these jobs that are actually in professional and business services areas, so that's good news. Construction also at the highest level since 2009, so that's good news. And apparently also hourly wages are going up. Despite all the talk about the minimum wage, there's a lot of hourly workers who are making way more than minimum wage, and even that number is beginning to go up. So all good things. The thing that I wanted to talk about that I feel that is a little bit sad is that there are a flood of store closings. I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of brick and mortar chain stores are kind of crumpling and, I hate to say dying, but at least sick. Radio Shack is closing a lot of stores. They announced that they're going to close up to 1,100 stores. That's 20% of their locations in North America. Staples is closing a lot of stores. JCPenney closing stores. Even Macy's closing some stores, although they say they're doing well. Sears also, and Kmart. And I wonder, really, what does it mean about the retail landscape? I think I'm going to make a prediction here, which could be completely ridiculous, but I believe that we as Americans, and certainly I know me and my friends, still really like to shop. So I don't think retail stores are going away. But what seems to be happening, if you look at a Radio Shack or a Staples or whatever, those are not fun shopping trips. Those are have-to shopping trips, right? I need a widget to fix my Whoosie What's It at home, so I go to Radio Shack, right? Or I need more printer paper, or I need, a cable to connect one computer to another, whatever it is, right? So those are the things you go to Staples for. Those are the things you go to Radio Shack for. And now you can get those things online, depending on who you are and where you are, sometimes with free shipping. So why do I want to go to Staples, park the car, walk in, carry out the heavy like ream of paper, schlep it into my car and into my house, when Amazon, I can get free shipping and they'll deliver that same paper for the same price, free shipping, and right to my door. And it's like I don't have to do anything. I don't have to leave the house. I save time, right?
Yeah, you're right. And I completely agree with you about it being a hassle to go to those places because you really don't shop there.
Right.
And the bigger places that aren't going away are the places you go to shop, and they're carrying the stuff that Radio Shack and Staples has
anyway.
So I right, completely agree with what you're saying.
If you need that thing in last minute, right?
Yes.
Like you can still get it at Walmart or Target.
There you go. Walmart, yeah. Those are the two that are, well, you mentioned Kmart kind of going away.
I think Kmart has bigger problems, honestly.
I agree. But yeah, Walmart and Target are kind of the only ones that stuck around. Walmart more so, I think.
Yeah. So I wonder, I mean, I hope that it's not going to dramatically, I've been to some districts around town, historic Roswell is one of them. I was up there recently and there's lots of restaurants, great restaurants right next to each other. But if you want to walk around a little bit in between your, maybe before your dinner reservation or after dinner, there's not that many shops anymore. It's all restaurants. There's only a handful of shops. So there needs to be a balance in my mind. I think there is room for upscale, interesting retail still. And I think that's evidenced by some of the construction that's going on. But it is also interesting just to watch the whole landscape sort of begin to change as people more and more begin to trust online and free shipping becomes more and more prevalent and all of that. All right. I have to tell you about something that kind of worked my last nerve today. I was, minding my own business, surfing the net as I tend to do. And I happened to notice that yesterday was International Women's Day, March 8th, every year apparently. And I thought, oh, International Women's Day. Did I miss something? I need to know about this. So I started Googling. And did you know that there's literally a day for everything you could have ever thought of in your entire life? There's National Hot Dog Day. Tomorrow is National Mario Day. Yes, Mario as in Mario Brothers video game. That is literally a thing, and it's tomorrow. And if that's not enough for you, today is National False Teeth Day. Yes, National False, that's literally, I'm not making any of this up. There is a Cold Cuts Day. There is a Plan a Solo Vacation Day. There is Oh, tomorrow, in addition to being Mario Day, it's also, I like this one, the Day of Awesomeness. So obviously, oh, there's also Organize Your Home Office Day. You know, back in the day, speaking of days, there we used to kind of complain about quote-unquote Hallmark holidays. You know, Secretary's Day, or now I guess they call it Administrator's Day or whatever they call it. And some of the, you know, there was, I was okay with Mother's Day and Father's Day, but then they had Grandparents' Day and Aunts and Uncles' Day, and I don't even know. And we used to say it was all created by Hallmark, so we would all go out and buy cards. Well, I don't know what all the rest of this is. It's just marketing? Who comes up with this? Hot Dog Day? Is that like Oscar Mayer created it?
I don't even get False Teeth Day.
Like, I don't
What does that even mean?
What do you do? Take them out and wave them around?
They're going to have cards for False Teeth?
They are going to be having big parties on the west coast of Florida for False Teeth Day. I don't know. I don't know. And it's bizarre to me. This is what happens, I think, when someone gets the great idea. This is like a marketing ploy that has gone awry. Like, none of the days now seem important. All of them. You know, we were talking the other day about, my boyfriend and I were talking about St. Patrick's Day, because St. Patrick's Day is a thing. It's a real thing. I mean, you know, I believe, and I don't know the religious beginnings of it. I know it's Irish. Everybody knows that. And St. Patrick, I'm sure, was a good guy that did something great, and everybody's, you know, that's why we're celebrating. But really, it's turned into, let's call it what it is, green beer drinking day, right? So I was sort of saying to my boyfriend, I'm kind of amazed that it's still a thing. Well, of course, the bars love it. They're going to keep promoting it because people go out and drink green beer and all of that. But what are all these other days about? Really? It's just somebody trying to get you to do something. It has to be to buy something, right? Maybe you're supposed to buy more false teeth. I don't know. Maybe you're supposed to play hours and hours of Mario Brothers tomorrow.
At least I understand those other ones. I'm still trying to figure out false teeth.
I have no idea. The picture that I saw for National False Teeth Day was hilarious too, by the way. Plan a solo vacation day? Really? Cold cuts day? That Oscar Mayer has to be behind half of these. I think there's like a peanut butter day. Like, any food you can think of has a day.
At least people like those things. I don't think anybody likes false teeth.
Yeah, it's
and I'm
bizarre.
Still harping on that, but
it's bizarre.
It's very bizarre.
And then here's the other thing. So here's what happens. Something like International Women's Day, which ostensibly could be really important. You know, I do fully believe that women have made great strides in the last however many years in terms of where we are from an equality standpoint in the workplace, you know, societally, all of that. On the other hand, you know, we're not all the way there. There's still a lot of inequality in terms of women in higher positions in companies and the way women are treated sometimes. And certainly around the world, that's for sure true, more so than here. There are a lot of countries where women are still really, really lesser or treated as lesser. So International Women's Day could be a really important thing, but it's lost in the haze of Mario Day and Hot Dog Day and all the, I mean, it's so, you know, I missed it altogether. I missed it. It was yesterday. I don't know what I was supposed to do to celebrate it, but I missed it. So I think, and by the way, don't even get me started because we only have a minute left, but there are also XYZ months. There's a month of everything too. It's Women's Month right now. Who knew? March. All right. Who knew? It's Women's Month. But there's like a month for everything too. And there's probably a week for. I mean, it's enough. Enough. Come up with a new marketing ploy, people. And that's what I have to say. Enough.
They'll keep coming up with new things. It's not going to stop with False Teeth and Mario Day.
And it doesn't even matter that there's only 365 days in a year.
No.
Because yeah.
Some days they're going to have two things for one day eventually.
They do. They already do. It's ridiculous. All right. We will be back next week with another Business Radio X Week in Review. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for the inaugural Dana Barrett Show.
One
right
more
here.
Final self-plug.
That's right. Tune in tomorrow, 9 a.m., 1190. We'll see you then.